Почему я водовоз? Потому что без воды ни сюда, ни туда.
The bliss of the abyss.
Once upon a time in a land far away, a poor farmer and his wife lived all alone. They were very lonesome.
Abyss.
With Robert Newmark Jones.
Hear your voice on the side. They're looking for something, I don't know, mine would be cheery, uplifting, kind right. of, how's it going, guys? You yeah. know, that kind of attitude. So they're looking for...
it's not one of your characters.
Yeah, exactly. So they kind of go and like, this is who we need. And there's no audition process. Maybe there's like a test. Here's a script, read it out, and they want to hear it. But usually it's like, hey, are you free tomorrow, 2 p.m.? Yeah, okay. You get a confirmation a couple hours later. It's like, okay, come for an hour.
Right.
And it's just that easy.
Yeah.
Is it that chill?
I've been looking to break into it. So I'm on one of the websites and I've got like stuff recorded. I've got reels and demos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Doing like different voices and accents and characters. And
obviously.
I don't know. I mean, how many different ones do you do? Is it? I mean, obviously you do natural.
For
so
the
like,
reel, you mean for the reel that we made with...
Yeah. We're already talking shop, aren't we? I should probably introduce you. I'll do like a proper
you take your
thing
time,
later yeah, to introduce you. But let me just officially say, welcome to the Bliss of the Abyss, Aaron.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you.
I'm really glad to be here. This is an impromptu thing, so I'm really happy.
Well, I just thought, why not? We're going to work together on our script and on this short film that we're going to be shooting.
Mm.
And we got lots to talk about that with that, but I thought... You know, we don't know each other, really.
No, this is
a nice way to get to know each other.
Exactly. Really first conversation to have, aside from like seeing some religious Jews pray or something like that, you know.
Well, that's one of the things I want to get into today is definitely because anti-Semitism has been in the news. So that would be an interesting topic.
Okay, all right.
We can discuss. But before that,
yeah.
I want to hear some of your characters.
Some of my characters. You mean on the voice reel?
Yeah. Come on, let's hear. I'll play you some of mine if you want.
I'm
not beyond embarrassing myself.
Thanks.
Don't worry.
I mean, the kind of standard character that I have is with my voice like now. It's more like upbeat. It's like, well, don't you think it'll be great that one day you can tell yourself, I did it? Well, there you know, that kind of like,
right.
Come on, dude, you can do it.
Yeah.
Don't give up. And
right.
that kind of like bright attitude. That's one of them. And then that's most of the things. But then obviously with the video games, it's more like you've got your Russian characters in the film. The Russian takes it a bit more down, you know, and you're a bit more serious. And,
yeah.
That kind of attitude.
I often think about that because I do a Russian thing as well.
Do you?
I often think it's like, if you're a Russian with like a sunny disposition and a cheery attitude.
It doesn't exist.
Just,
I'm sorry. That does not exist. That is just none out there. I had, there's on Facebook, some Russian friend... She posted like this question of, does anybody know or know about of a book that describes the Russian mentality, the Russian man mentality?
Right.
And in my mind, I was just like, Jesus Christ, what a question to ask.
Yeah.
I imagine like, you know, massive book of 3,000 pages being thrown at her. And I was just like, Russians aren't simple dispositions.
No.
They've got such a deep history of just like, life is tough and hard in Moscow and, you know...
Yeah, so, dude. Hard drinking, hard living, hard thinking people.
You know how you said earlier about like some English people really like to jump into the water and whatnot?
Yeah.
So that's kind of that's the one thing when I say I'm Russian, I have to be able to jump into like a Siberian lake frozen after a shot of vodka because that's the image that I have, you know?
Otherwise, you are not a man.
Yes, otherwise, who are you?
Who are you?
What are you doing?
What, you can't drink into water?
Давай, ну, что ты хочешь?
Pussy.
Yeah, exactly. So the character.
So do you speak a bit Russian as well?
Yeah.
I can read Cyrillic. I studied in Russia for like 3 months or 4 or 5,
I can't
remember.
Can you read what this is?
Oh my god!
Yeah, I'm putting you on
tested.
The spot now.
Skola Sma, what's that other one? It's in the script. Smaya. It's school something.
Yeah.
And then that's...
I can't actually read it. It's upside down.
It's in a clever script.
It's like the capital. I don't know how to say it, but capital letters. So
Yeah.
Mchat.
Is that mch?
Mchat.
Okay, that's an H, isn't
it? And then this is why it's funny. So it's weird that this M is actually a T, which I never understood how the hell they came to that, but Skola Itua. I can't even read it myself. It's
yeah.
Basically, it's the Mchat. It's like the school, the artistic school, whatever
it is. Right, 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 right.
Dude, but that's this. So wait, you went to Russia.
So I studied at, what's it called? The Vakhtangov Institute in Moscow.
Whoa.
Which is fucking immense.
Whoa.
Because the kids there are just so on it.
Wait, is this, what was it part of? Like, how
it was,
did you...
It was like linked to my MMA. My MMA.
Okay.
My MMA.
You came there to kick some ass.
Yeah, don't you know I'm the number one fighter in Russia?
You know, your chilled attitude put me off. But now,
yeah.
Now I know I got to keep an eye on
you. Don't be fooled. But yeah, no, they taught us. Some of the people that taught us were such characters. Like, there was this one who everyone called Father Christmas. He looked older than time.
Yeah.
He smoked the whole time. He only spoke Russian.
Right.
That his mantra was Vinimanya, Vinimanya, Vinimanya. That was it, basically.
That's all he said.
That's pretty much it.
I mean, he isn't wrong.
He's right, yeah. Actually. That was the thing. You were like,
yeah.
You're on it. We had, who else did we have that was good? The dude who trained us in like physical stuff. Because
right.
they have a very muscular way of working.
Oh, yeah.
It's very dynamic.
Very physical.
Very physical.
Like, yeah.
So we had an ex KGB person
Oh, shit.
Training us on our fit. And he'd like find pressure points on you and like work you like a dog. But it was amazing though. You got like much more flexible, much more disciplined.
Wait, just to put myself in the context. This is an acting school, right?
Yeah.
So is it just acting or is it performing arts or is it like also...
They link it all in there. So they do...
But do they also do music or dance or is it just acting?
Yeah.
It's everything.
It's like... training you to be excellent.
Right.
That's the idea.
we want the excellence.
Yeah, that is
nothing
it.
Nothing more.
One of the best things they...
Don't be shit.
Don't be shit.
Yes.
What is this? Acting? Yeah. Shit. One of my favorite things I remember, what was her? I think it was Irina taught us. She was like, never go on stage with a cat. It's like, what? She's like, a cat is pure intention.
Yeah.
Everything it does is pure and real Vinimanya. And alive. And it's Vinimanya all the time. Attention, right? And it's like, as soon as there's a cat there, the audience are just going to watch the cat because they just see these humans faking it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at them acting. Ugh, gross. And it's like, but look at the cat.
Yeah,
look at the cat. Yeah. Neutral.
I think I heard something like that as well, where they said you can't upstage a kid, like an actual baby or a young child or a dog or any animal because they're just instinct.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing
right.
that isn't coming out of pure instinct.
Exactly.
You know? So
yeah.
I completely can relate to that.
Yeah.
There was this time from school, actually, they sent us to Mechat, which is how I got this. And we spent 7 or 10 days there, just like, you know.
Just training.
Just seeing how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember... because I was like the only Russian guy, so I was in the position to be able to translate what's going on. And one time we were waiting to get into class and we could hear this like shouting, like just, you know, complete hoarse shouting of the teacher towards the students, like, how dare you do that? Like, stop thinking about it. And the kid is just like, you know, I only did it because of, no, this is not what it's supposed to be. Yeah, don't think about anything else. You know, it was just like, and everybody was just like, you know, thinking, if you think about British teaching or the schools here, you'd never dare have a teacher, you know, behave towards like, to you.
Well,
like
especially
that.
Not nowadays, right?
Yeah.
It's like discipline you're hearing like that, suspension.
They're gone. So in Russia, they don't give a fuck.
They
do not give a fuck how the student feels because you're there to learn from these teachers who are the ones who have the knowledge. So if you want to learn, you better accept this person for who he is.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you are fucking out.
Yeah.
So,
feelings
and you know, she was like, poor girl. She was saying like, I just wanted to know, like, see how she walks or how she kind of behaves. Like, do not give a fuck how she walks. You have an intention and just act that. Just do that intention to the other person. See if you can change his behavior.
Right.
Don't think about how you're going to walk up to, you know. And, and all of us was just like, mouth open, just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And I remember later, because we got to mingle with the students.
Yeah.
And one of the students said, he was on his second year, I think, and he was like, I got to talk to him in Russian and all that. And he was just like, yeah, my teacher said that I need to break up with my girlfriend.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's like, I was like, what do you mean? It's like, yeah, they say it's taking too much of my attention and they can't allow my attention to be split between my girlfriend and my studies. So they've kind of told me I need to break up with her. And again, my mind is just like, poof, poof. That kind of idea of excellency.
Right.
That kind of idea of like unendless commitment to your craft.
God.
Regardless of, you know, you've come to learn, then fucking learn.
Yeah.
You know? And
It's a bit extreme for me.
I mean, are they known for anything else?
But you can just imagine the situation of like, oh, fuck. I mean, I do love her. I was going to propose. But you know what? You're right. Cindy, it's over, right? And then 2 weeks later, you see the professor with Cindy. What? He's like, I have time.
Yes.
Cindy likes me.
I'm no student. You're a student.
This is the next lesson you'll learn. Jealousy. Use these feelings you have.
What are you feeling? Use it. This is good. Yeah. What film was that? There was a film with... what was that guy from... shit, I'm horrible with names and fucking actors. That kind of Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, yeah.
What's the
kid's name?
The curly hair, you know what I'm talking
about. Yeah, is it John something? I want to say it's John something. John Heder?
John Frisky. I mean, for all I know, it can be, you know.
let's have a look. Napoleon Dynamite cast... It's John Heder. Nailed John it. Heder.
Well done. Well done.
Cool.
I just remember, like, this is when I teach. I remember watching the first film he did after Napoleon Dynamite. It was him and another older actor. And it was that situation, basically. He came. It was like one of those, like, how to pick up a girl. And there's the main guy who's, like, teaches them how to pick up a girl. Like, looking back, it's a horrible film. But
yeah.
It was the same situation where he's, like, he asked for his advice to how to pick up this girl that he really loves and ends up, like, completely... tripping him up while the teacher now is trying to catch him up, catch this girl that he was dating or trying to date. Anyways, you just brought me to that.
Right. Exactly. I hope he's doing all right.
Oh, yeah.
So if ever there was someone who was pretty typecast, I, you know, one huge role, an amazing job.
Yeah.
And then I guess you never hear of him. It's only got 6.9 out of 10 on IMDb as well. I love Napoleon Dynamite.
I loved it. It was hilarious. The only thing I do remember is the dance, obviously.
Of course.
But,
Yeah,
it was great. It was such an awkward film.
I know. It catches it. Eat the ham, Tina. God.
Yeah, I don't really actually... Those two
Tina was the llama.
Was that?
Tina was the llama. Don't you remember? They had a llama. And he would go and feed it ham, which I don't think they eat.
I used to have a faint memory. I don't know. I must have... Yeah, I don't remember it that well, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know.
He has disappeared. But, yeah, anyways, the Russian...
Yeah, so you can actually... As in, were you born in Russia? You can speak... Are you fluent? Or?
No, I guess I am fluent to a certain degree.
Right.
So I can have a very conversational... conversation.
Talk well.
Yes, exactly. As you can see in English, I'm just as much into it. But, yeah, I can have a good conversation... with anyone in Russian.
Yeah.
But when it comes to really being able to express a more complex emotional degree or a political, you know, anything that has more...
depth and substance. Like, you're not sitting down and reading a philosophy book in Russian.
Exactly, and being able to express that in a very clear way. But yes, aside from that, I can communicate with anyone really freely.
And it's Vodovoz, right? Is your...
Yeah, the actual right way of saying is Vodovoz.
Vodovoz.
Yeah, but I mean, I let people say
what does it mean?
It means water bender.
Well, because water bender?
No, I wish.
I was like, are you the last water bender?
I am, thank you. Now everybody knows, you know.
Okay. We'll cut it out, don't worry. You got to retain your secret identity.
Exactly. I can't have people knowing this.
Yeah, because I knew it might be water because I know vodka and water have the same root.
Exactly.
Which is interesting.
And vodichka, which was where it comes from.
Like a small little...
Yeah, exactly. But I'm the water bearer. Vada voz. Voz is to bear, to have something.
Carry.
So just imagine, like, back in the old days when they had little...
In the shtetl,
the Jews, and that they had the one guy with, like, the two buckets on a wooden thing that he has on his shoulders. And I love that image, that my great times of bajillion, whatever.
God, this is like past regression therapy. You're going back to your peoples.
Oh, I feel the roots. And
We're a proud water-bearing people.
They needed that water bearer.
They did.
To supply them the water.
You're not going to kill the water bearer,
no,
are you?
No, because otherwise you die yourself.
There we go. Although you could be argued to bear water, not the most skillful profession.
Hey, now.
I mean, I'm just saying, there's... if you were to get ill and pass away, anyone no else one. Would.
I wonder how they like how they made this, how they unionized.
Oh right,
how
yeah,
they
yeah, yeah.
Like, this is, you can't do this unless you have to pass like some kind of exam.
Exactly.
If
yeah.
If you fill that, you know, that bucket to the rim.
Yeah.
You can only drop. You can't drop anything.
Yeah,
actually.
Exactly.
If you drop a bit of it, sorry, not
right.
good enough.
And it's going to be the two pole. I mean, the one long pole system across both
yeah.
with the two sides.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
there's,
yeah.
there'll be a balancing skill there. That's important.
Maximizing the amount you can have, man.
Yeah.
This is a skill. Do
yeah. That. And you're like, what, 6'8", 300 pounds, full of muscle. So that makes
exactly. I was well-groomed and well-built for this career.
cool. Oh, can you say something for me in Russian, then?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, have you got one ready? Go
oh,
on.
No, I can sing the
the anthem?
Just to show you.
Don't, because I'll
just,
get up
no,
and
no,
start.
Just to show
it's my
you,
favorite.
Just to show you how unionized... this was, there is a song for water bearers.
Shut up.
Listen. Почему я водовоз? Потому что без воды ни суды и ни туды. That's it.
Okay.
That's what I sing as I take my water
as you
from
take
one
it.
Town to another.
Right.
But what am I saying? Can you translate what I
say? Give me one more.
Okay. Почему я водовоз? Потому что без воды ни суды, ни туды.
No, I don't know. If no. I had to take a guess, it's yeah. like, I do it every day. There's not a day where I don't do it. I bear
I
the water.
The this is the cheery disposition Russian that we were talking about. Actually, now it fits. No, it's basically like, why am I a water bearer? Because without water... ni sude ni tude is like a saying, like there's no here, no there.
Right.
There's you won't survive, basically.
Yeah.
So there we go.
So it's a threat to the townspeople, basically.
There is no life. There's no.
Yes. Yeah, that's the poetic way of looking at it. Yeah.
We were
definitely.
Poets.
Yeah, aqua vida, man.
So
that's
yeah,
cool.
So there we go. But that's what I like about my last name, I guess. It's a funny little thing. What is your last? You've got a long name.
I got lots of names.
Yeah, depending who meets you.
Yeah, which one do you want to know the meaning of? You only get one. I have four real names.
Wait, first names or last names?
Like one of that's a first name, one of that's a middle name, and then two surnames.
Right.
Then I also have a Hebrew name, and I also have my comedy name. So okay. I guess that gives you seven to choose from. Which one would you like to know about?
Comedy. I want another comedy name.
Okay. Ruskin Denmark.
Ruskin Denmark.
Yeah.
What? Really? Why?
Yeah.
How did you get to that?
It's a long, complicated story.
Okay.
But basically...
Ruskin Denmark.
Ruskin Denmark.
You were in Denmark, obviously.
No. Oh, although okay. I have been to Denmark.
All right. Okay.
So here's the thing, right? I'm half Irish.
Okay.
Half Jewish.
Okay.
And the exact midway point between Israel and Ireland is Sweden, which is right next to Norway, that used to be a part of Finland, which was once owned by Denmark. So that explains that perfectly.
Is this part of your routine?
Well, gave it away, the fact that it wasn't funny.
No, it's the...
No, it's, I once got a bit of mail addressed to... myself.
Ruskin Denmark.
As Ruskin Denmark. I don't know how they got my name so wrong.
Right.
Because it's Robert Newmark Jones.
Right, yeah.
But somehow they'd conflated it. I used to live
Wait.
By Ruskin Park. Okay. I actually, weirdly enough, had this name before I moved to Brixton.
Right.
And in Brixton, there's a fucking hill called Denmark Hill.
Mm.
And a park on it.
Called Ruskin Park?
Yes.
What?
So what the fuck?
What?
It's nominative determinism, isn't it?
That is some kind of the world, the ages are telling you to. You should have lived here. This should have been your space,
yeah.
man.
And in a way, I always have lived here.
Wait. But you have to set this straight for me. Which one is it? Is it the mail that you got? Or is it you just made up a word from Denmark to
right.
this to that?
Or is it the first thing I told you? We'll never know, I guess.
Oh, man, you don't understand. I need to know this. This is not like... So Ruskin.
Yeah, what does that mean?
That's Denmark. I'll go with the first one. I'm going with what you said. So Denmark, that's because of the whole connection. What's Ruskin then?
Ruskin is meaning Russian. Probably from a pet form of the medieval personal name Rose.
Whoa.
Or Gaelic Rusk. A reduced plural of peeler of bark. An occupational name borne by a family of tanners. Whoa. So you'd be the water carrier and I'd be the tanner.
The tanner, best friends.
And I believe for tanning you need water,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, I was going to say, man.
Buddy.
Let's hook up. All these years?
Come on, here we go. Get the business going.
All right, okay, man. I'm going to start bringing some water. You get it going.
You get that leather ready. What? No, not leather. Bark. Peeler of bark.
Man, it's funny. Well, so if I look you up, will I find you in Ruskin, Denmark then?
You might. Depends. Oh, I'm trying to get a blackout on the internet on that. Do you know what I mean? There's some
good luck, man.
There's compromat out there.
That's never going to happen, man.
You know, getting things removed from the internet. That's not what people do anymore, though. Do you know what they do now?
What?
There's whole companies that exist to bury unfavorable content.
Really?
So if you get like mired in a scandal,
yeah,
you have to wait a bit of time, and then you employ people, and what they do is they flood the internet with like hits for you.
Oh, I've heard about
which
this.
Are different things.
Didn't they do this for Boris Johnson about the whole? I heard that about his bus. So how he had said about the bus and everything and 350 mil.
And
then they got this company to hit him with so many other things that if you'd write down those certain words, that he had a birthday on a bus or something, gave birth on a bus, obviously not a hint,
right.
Something like that, that if you'd write those specific words, the first thing that pops up wouldn't be the fact that he lied to the nation about, you know, all that.
Yep.
So I've heard about
it's SEO, that. Isn't it? That's what they call it in business. Search engine optimization.
Crazy.
That's
crazy.
The shit.
Yeah. I need that shit.
Yeah, that's the thing, apparently.
I need that, really.
I have no idea how it works, so don't ask me.
I've tried Googling, obviously, my name a couple of times, and I see pictures of me.
Yeah.
When you started off or whatever as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And you just see these horrible headshots or horrible pictures. God. It's like, why is this the first thing that comes up? Why is this the last thing I've done in my whole life, the first thing that I show up?
I know. My first headshot's on the internet as well, and it's like, that didn't get me any work, all right? My recent ones have. Why are they not coming up? Why is this terrible artifact?
It doesn't make any sense.
No.
Maybe that's just the Google kind of...
algorithm.
Their own personal joy. Let's fuck with some people. Wait, yeah. So about your voiceover, which is how we got into the conversation.
Okay, yeah.
You should definitely give that a shot.
Like I said, I've got some demos and stuff, and I'm on this website, and I've submitted some stuff. I did this webinar with this... Shout out to Mary Jane Wells.
Mary Jane Wells.
Fucking yeah. So she's part of this Facebook page, and she was giving away like free, basically, webinars, I guess is a way of calling them. I don't know, like, you know, you'd sort of... She's a very successful voiceover artist, so I learned... She basically told me about the business, how to get started, places to do things, and just keep plugging away, basically. So there's a lot of people out there, you know, eventually you'll start to book, and then it will start to, you know, you make contacts, blah, 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 blah. So I've been, you know, I've been getting it going.
So what characters do you have, then?
What shall I play you?
Sir Ruskin.
Probably my favourite one... Oh God!
Ruskin Denmark. I'm gonna just start calling you like that.
Is me trying to do a Northern Irish accent. So this is probably really embarrassing. So apologies to everyone else.
To all the Northern
a fly
Irish.
And a flea flew into a flue. Said the fly to the flea, "What on earth should we do? Let us fly," said the flea. Said the fly, "Shall we flee?" So they flew through the door and the flew.
That's a great one. I love it.
The problem is I'm too much of an idiot to realise that I shouldn't have that on the internet. No. But it brings me joy, so there it is.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think you really love it. I think this just gives you that, just that tickles you at the right spot and you don't care. I love it, man. It's great.
Thanks, dude. I don't know how much work it's going to get me.
I can't say I understood it, like, no offence.
A fly and a flea. Flew into a flu. So it's a fly and a flea.
No, but I'm already so bad with understanding accents, so it doesn't, it doesn't even matter. It's not, it's just, when I first came to the country, oh my God. Like, you know, in Israel, there is no accent. I mean, there is an accent of Israelis, you know, speaking English.
Yeah.
But there's no
It's not like regional dialects of Israelis.
No, what? Israel's 60 years old, 70 years old?
Yeah.
Whoa, no.
But you've got, you know, Sephardi, Mizrahi, Ethiopian, Ashkenazi.
Like,
I mean,
more to do like your own kind of... That's the same as Irish accent and Scottish accent. And like, that's your background.
Yeah.
But having a native English accent that is so different per... This, you know, London, South London, East London, North London, the differences, the immigration of the Jews to, you know, East London and that effect in the Cockney accent and all that, that does not exist as much in Israel. And
interesting.
That blew my mind. That blew my mind. Liverpool, Birmingham, you know, all those strong differences. And I just had to like smile and nod because I did not want to, I did not want to offend anyone.
Yeah.
But also, you just look like a dumbass smiling and nodding.
Well, especially if they've stopped talking and you're like,
Oh, fuck, it's my turn. Yeah, yeah. How do I respond?
I mean, I actually still, you know, certain English accents I find pretty hard to understand. Mm. Like if you've ever heard like a very thick Cornish accent.
Right.
Where they've also got like they've got a dialect as well, so they'll be throwing in their words for things, and I'm like, okay, I don't know what that word is, and I didn't understand the other stuff. That I do know the words of, and I get that way with sometimes like a Geordie, a very thick Newcastle accent,
right?
Which I can't really do either, which always annoyed me.
Which is on your reel, right?
Which is on my reel, yeah, that's right. A fly and a flea, but I never flew. But speaking about. Israel and, and Judaism and stuff. Yeah. What is your take on all of the anti-Semitic stuff that's been in the news lately? It seems like it was a big... There was a lot of it, right, in this country. I don't know how long you've been in the UK, but under Labour with Jeremy Corbyn, obviously there was... It seemed like a scandal a minute with him not dealing with it. And that stuff seemed to be fixed by him leaving and the report, and now there have been payouts and stuff, compensation. That seems like it's moving in the right direction.
The compensation, what do you mean? What?
For the whistleblowers. There were these whistleblowers...
That had said that this behavior was happening within, within the Labour Party.
Yeah, and they were basically shut up under the previous administration, told to go away, expelled from the party, forced out of the party, whatever.
Wow. So they've acknowledged it and given... for this behavior.
Yeah.
Wow.
So a step in the right direction from, you know, quite a few years of things getting progressively worse for Jews in Labour and being forced out. And I'm not going to go into it because it's kind of a bit old history now.
Yeah.
And I'm not like an expert on it or anything.
Look, Ruskin, I really don't have...
But the latest stuff has been, it seems to be hitting the news again because there's been quite a few prominent artist, the latest one has been Wiley. I don't know if you saw any of his tweets.
I've read like a little bit about it. I didn't see the tweets themselves.
But... I went down the rabbit hole on it because it was nuts, dude. I mean, it was like... And now he's been permanently suspended from Twitter, but I don't spend that much time on social media, but when something like takes my attention and it's like a rabbit hole, I might go all the way to the bottom of the rabbit hole and find the fucking rabbit and kill it.
Okay.
And he had, I don't know, maybe 200 tweets in the space of like a day or two.
Wow.
Just being like full of,
Wow.
Horrible, but like weird shit. And he tried to come out and go, actually, it wasn't about all Jews. It was just about my manager.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah.
And that, well, without having read the tweet, you know, the tweets, to me, it sounded like, okay, maybe this was like a beef that he just, you know, generalized and decided because he was so angry, he decided to generalize it to all Jews because whatever. Not that that accuses it in any way, obviously. But I kind of like, okay, let's give him the benefit.
Give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
I think I would have given him the benefit of the doubt as well if I hadn't have gone down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I didn't read all
that's
those
the thing.
Taking your word for it.
Because obviously sometimes people can phrase things poorly and you might say one thing and it gets amplified and distorted and then, you know, people start to misquote you and stuff like that. But when you go on a tweet storm and it's like, well, you know, he compared them to the KKK. He said, like, oh, you know, slippery people, don't try. You know, money, you know, all the canards coming up and up again. All of those stereotypes coming up. And I'm just thinking, if it has just come from this one manager who he's had a beef with, how bad was that beef that he's, like, now disparaged an entire race?
Right. No, I was thinking that as well. I was like, well, surely then that the fact that you are getting pissed off and pointing out the things that you think are motivating your manager to treat you this way as the reason for it in itself already says a lot about how you view Jews.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
So in that respect, then that it already shows that, you know, I was just thinking when people are angry and they allow themselves to like just let loose and let their thoughts just go, then it might come out as like, okay, this is how you actually feel underneath every all the decorum and underneath all the kind of like, you know, politeness and correctness. You maybe think that.
Yeah.
It's true.
Right.
You know? And
I agree.
Yeah, because I guess that's what people have just now seen, I guess.
I mean, where else does it come from? You know? It's like when you say, like, when people are drunk and they have an argument and stuff, and it's like, yeah, that wasn't me, you know, when I called you those names. And it's like, who was it then, though, dude?
Like, yeah.
You know?
It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, the question of anti-Semitism, for me specifically, because I've noticed and heard a lot about it from my Jewish friends, and recently with the 24-hour Twitter blackout or whatever it was that people had been doing, I just don't really, I don't know, maybe it's because I've been to so many different countries as a kid, and I've traveled a lot, and I don't really feel personally very rooted in one spot necessarily, or connected to one specific kind of persona, so to speak. Not persona, but just like
a very Jewish story, you could argue.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, completely. But look, we're doing the short play about a religious part of Judaism, and I was never even connected to that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm Jewish by culture, I'm Jewish by tradition,
right?
I'm not Jewish by faith or by following the law,
right?
So even that wasn't something that I can say I feel Jewish. Like I don't. My dad feels it. My dad is like, no, you need a Jewish wife, and you need to, have Jewish kids, and you need, like, it's important for him. I really don't see it that way. So, in that sense, I never attribute myself as like, I'm Jewish, you know.
Right.
I'm a person. We all are. I have this background story of this, and you know, I am Jewish, but it's not like, I'm Jewish.
Right, it's not forefront of your personality.
Exactly.
It's not the thing you open with.
Exactly.
It's
more of a punchline of being circumcised more than anything, you know.
It's a good one.
But so that's why I feel like I'm a bit disconnected from this. And personally, I never have felt any anti-Semitic action to have in person.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like my friends have told me that, you know, specific friend that I have in mind, he's gone to an audition and they've asked him, oh, where are you from? And he said, Israel. And they're like, oh, yeah, you can go. Without doing the audition.
That's ugly.
That is very ugly. And that, for somebody like, for anyone's experience, that would be a shock.
Yeah.
But I have never experienced something like that.
Yeah.
And I find it very hard. I try and be very open, but I also have never experienced it. So I don't really know how to, I find it hard to relate to that.
Right. You don't have sort of a slot that you can put it in inside of you that mirrors it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've never been beaten up for being Jewish, but I've been threatened for it, and I've definitely had people say various things to me at different points. Yeah,
really.
So I'm quite anti-Semitic. It definitely still exists.
Yeah, oh no.
In quite a strong way.
It definitely still exists.
A lot of it just as like an undercurrent. Like I had a plumber recently who just started to make anti-Semitic comments to me.
What?
After he found out I was Jewish as well. Which is like,
you think this was the right person to say it to? Finally, I have an audience. I can say things.
Yeah, because he probably hasn't run into any, there's so few of us out there. He's like, finally, this, and this. Do you know what I mean? Within 2 seconds, he's calling me a Jesus killer. And I'm like, fuck's sake.
Oh, mate. Actually, I love that kind of thing. I had a manager at work, and she's super Christian and super devout. And at one point, she was just like, well, you know, you guys have killed Jesus, right?
Mm.
And she used to bust my balls all the time.
Right.
She used to bust my balls all the time. So that was her attitude. And if you can't deal with it, well, then tough for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, even when I'd get pissed off, because I think like that's a bit rude, she'd be like, well, your burr problem. So I was like, okay, I know you now.
Right.
I was like, she said, you know, you killed Jesus, right? I was like, yeah, I know it.
Lean in.
I leaned in all the way. I was like, yeah, but he deserved it though, didn't he?
Yeah, he was chatting a lot of shit.
Yeah,
let's
be
real.
He was starting to rile shit up. So we fucking thought, you know, as well, we just shut him up. And she got so pissed off. She got so annoyed. She's
so
like,
there we go.
She just couldn't say, because I could see her bubbling and her like vein in the middle. She's like, you can't say that. You know, she just like, I'm going to report you. It's like, All right, fine.
So that's funny to me because that's.
You opened it. You were the one exactly. who said, like, you brought it up. You know, you killed Jesus. Yeah, I know.
And she's instigated this, like, she's your manager, right? So the way she runs it, that's the culture of that company is going to be similar, right? Yeah. So if she's got this ball-busting kind of character, then people are going to bust each other's balls.
Exactly.
That's what's going to happen.
That was exactly my thought.
But then, like, as soon as you start to bust her balls, she's like, oh, whoa, 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 no-go area, yeah, get you fired. Yeah, so it exposes the hypocrisy for me.
Yeah, completely. Though. But I loved it. I think yeah. that's a situation you can, like, really enjoy in.
yeah, definitely.
But I'm sorry to hear about that plumber. That's annoying.
It was annoying, yeah. I mean, it, you know, he was an idiot anyway, so I didn't feel threatened or anything. It's just, and he wasn't even doing it in like a funny way. So, like, again, if it was like a busting a ball thing, I can take it out as well as I can dish it. But if you're just going to be honestly anti-Semitic to me, it's like, well, then you're just a prejudiced person who is currently underneath my sink trying to fix my taps. So, what do I do with that?
Dude, you know, I'm just such a rich Jewish man.
Well,
in
yeah.
my, like, Brixton flat, whatever. And, you know, I've come to fix it because,
To control the media.
Yeah.
I know, man.
I know it's out there. It's a fact that it's out there. It's not even believing. It's a fact. And I see it and I hear it a lot. But I just have never... I mean, I've tried once to walk around with the Star of David.
Yeah.
For a half a year just to see outside on purpose. I mean, I didn't go to any, like, dangerous areas, right. so to speak, you know, quote unquote, if there are any of those. But I've never gotten a single look or a single... I've had one person at Itsu just point at it once and give me a wink and be like, hey, that's cool, you know.
Okay.
That was the most, like...
That's the closest you came.
Yeah.
You tried for a whole half a year to get some interest.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, man.
And then the day you take it off...
I should have taken the wink with me, man. I should have been like, oh, hey, man, what's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, nothing.
And no, I think... I mean, I haven't had that much. But again, I don't present myself as like... Like, I wouldn't feel that comfortable walking around certain parts of anywhere wearing, like, any kind of religious identification like that.
No, my mum would be super afraid, my dad as well.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, they wouldn't.
Well, you just can't know how people are going to react. And, like, a lot of the stuff, like we were talking about earlier, a lot of that stuff might be quite buried quite deep in their subconscious. And if they're having a shit day and they're an out-of-control person and... So, you know, a Jew killed Jesus, let's say, it might spark him off. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's really tough. I'm just thinking, I'm reading this book now. I can't remember what it's called. A Humankind. So it's human and kind, as in being, you know, kind right. to yeah. people. And it brings up the question of, are human beings born and innately bad and devious and selfish and uh-huh. only care for their own kind of interests?
Yeah.
Or are they actually very generous and good and kind? You know, where does it come from, and what are we actually, you know, as creatures? And it just talks about that kind of, like, how cynical our view of each other nowadays is.
Yeah.
Or our views are.
Yeah.
And he's trying to, like, give you a different perspective to try and open your mind to maybe see that people are better. You know, the motivations behind their actions, not to excuse their actions, but are intrinsically good and noble. So the question of can people do bad stuff? Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
How they get manipulated to do that is very interesting.
Mm.
But are we intrinsically... Have we always been just about fighting and war and self-interest or not? And it got to this point where, you know, the other person, how we see each other, how we get used, how we notice in news only the bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we just hear the bad things, because they're the ones that get attention. They're the ones that people sell, you know, just media, sell their stuff. So that's the things that are going to get people's attention. And that's what you get in your mind. And then you assume... More people are like this. So if more people are like this, then surely all people are like this. And it's just like, not that you necessarily have to believe that everyone, you can be open-minded, but it does seep in, I believe. And, you know, I find it hard, but if, let's say this kind of feeling of, like, everybody's anti-Semitic or they're okay, yes, but maybe not. You know, that I maybe it's naive of me to see it this way.
I don't know. I don't think it's naive. I think that that book is sort of that's kind of like one of the oldest philosophical questions, isn't it? Are you a blank slate? You know, there's nature and nurture, and there's how easily are people influenced?
Yeah.
Like, why? I mean, Wiley's one example. Nick Cannon was the other example, who's a big American celebrity who was basically saying that the black people are the original Israelites,
right?
And that these Jews, the Jews aren't. And you know, what it turns out is like someone who heard all that he was saying was like, oh, I know what he's done. He's read this book because I know about this book because it got this amount of publicity. And it's just this, it's just false history, right? It's just someone's bullshit theory. But he's just read it uncritically and has digested it and then spewed it out. And he happens to be famous. So it makes a big reverberation.
Right.
And like you say, we are sort of drawn towards, you know, there's a logical reason why we might be.
Yeah.
It's like until 150 years ago, you need to know if there's danger around you, right? But now we know if there's danger anywhere in the world. So like if a certain part of Syria is on fire, we might know about it.
Yeah,
if there's people being massacred in Western China, we might know about it.
Yeah.
Whereas in a way, we don't need to for our day to day.
Not really.
Yeah. So actually it adds extra
pressure,
anxiety, fear.
Yeah.
Whereas I think, I mean, have you ever seen the film Three Identical Strangers?
No.
I cannot recommend this enough to everybody.
Three Identical Strangers.
Yeah, so without wanting to give it away,
okay,
there's triplets who are separated at birth.
Oh, yes. And they grow up in very...
Yes, it's an amazing documentary.
I've not seen it, but I've heard of it.
I couldn't recommend it highly enough, honestly. It's extraordinary. I don't want to say too much about it because a lot of the reason they're separated and a lot of the way they're brought up is very interesting.
Right.
And they're radically different circumstances they're brought up in, and they have such interesting similarities and obviously some differences. Mm. And it's like, clearly we're not born a blank slate. There are certain, like, why does a dog sniff another dog's ass?
Right.
It's like, it just does.
Yeah.
Like, you can have a puppy, which has never been socialized with other dogs, taken away from its mum very early. As soon as it sees other dogs, it just does. Like, there's certain things that we are hardwired.
Evolutionarily speaking.
Yes.
It was just something that you would do.
Or, right.
Yeah.
And I think it's much safer, isn't it, to talk about animals in this way? Because as soon as you start to talk about humans in this way, even though we are just animals, people like think that you're passing a judgment or saying that we aren't flexible, can't change, you're born evil. I don't believe any of that stuff. No. But there are certain inclinations I think definitely we're born with, like reward pathways. Like I learned something recently, like the human beings, very early on, you know, when your brain is still, your skull is still hardening, so very young, their eyesight is fixed. So it's beyond a certain, it's like a range, a fine bandwidth. So they can't see any closer or any further away than that.
Yeah.
And that just happens to be the exact distance of if you're suckling at your mother's breast, that's eye contact. Yeah.
Oh, eye contact.
Yes.
Wow.
And that passes the oxytocin back and forth and you form this bond.
Bond, yeah.
And like it's like that's like wired into the system.
Wow.
So like even if that was the only thing we knew about human beings, you would already have to say it was not a blank slate. There's already some pathways.
Oh, 100%. But so what I like about this book is that it shows you, it gives you all these like preconceived ideas that we have about society, about, for example, a very popular one is you can see a lot of like films about apocalyptic films and how society reacts to that. And always the response is going to be, you know, we turn on each other.
Right.
We start defending our own property, ourselves. We don't trust anyone. It's like every man for himself.
Mm-hmm.
Where actually most of the proof and most of like the evidence shows that in situations like that, in critical situations like, you know, apocalyptic, so to speak, people tend to do the opposite.
They club together, they pool their resources, they share skills.
Exactly. They're there to help and there to support. And, you know, just from my experience with the whole coronavirus, I tried to join a volunteering group and there was no spot to
pick. I had the same experience. Yeah, they were not only we're full, but there's a huge waiting list.
Exactly. And that just shows you how much people in times of need are willing and contributing and opening up themselves to support other people. Mm. And that was like one of the points that, you know, they were saying in this book. What was it? Another one. There was like
that's very interesting.
What was it? It was about what's that play called when a band of kids are on an island and
The Lord of the Flies.
Yes.
Yes.
So I haven't read it, but from the book I understand that no spoilers. Sorry, guys. All the spoilers, but sorry.
Might have been written in like the early 20th, 19th. I don't know. Yeah, a long time ago.
So if you haven't read it, like me, it's okay.
So spoiler in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, exactly. So Piggy dies or whatnot, yeah. And the kids turn on each other, yeah. And it's like...
They become quote-unquote savages.
Right, exactly. And that was used at the time as an amazing play to show the deconstruction of even kids. How even kids can become savages,
right.
and self-defensive, and it's innate in us, you yeah. know? Whereas actually he found a real example.
What do you mean?
A real example where 7 kids were stuck, were abandoned. They decided to go on like English. I don't remember all the details, but they get stuck in an island for a year.
English schoolboys.
Yes.
No way.
Yeah. And they got stuck on an island, or not English schoolboys, but like they were. I think it had to do something with the English Empire. So they were.
Okay.
They learn English from that kind.
Oh,
of...
Oh, so Commonwealth. So like yes. maybe Australia or.
I'm okay. Shit with names and memory, but
right.
But the story was they got like a year on this island by themselves until they were found, and then, you know, they just got along. They knew how to solve their differences and their issues that obviously came up, and, you know, but they've lived there harmoniously for a year.
Wow.
And that was, he was using it, and obviously he went more in depth that I can remember.
Mm, that's fascinating.
How it's completely the opposite of how people think would react.
The real life Lord of the Flies. What happened when 6 boys were shipwrecked for 15 months? Marooned on an island in 1965, it turned out very differently from William Golding's bestseller.
There we go.
How freaking interesting that is.
Yeah, it's great. So he finds instances where we assume the worst of each other, and then shows you how actually, if you look at it from a different perspective, or actually more than that, not just look at a different perspective, he shows you evidence that it actually isn't what it seems to be.
Mm.
And then you kind of like, okay, you know what? Let's give ourselves a bit of a break.
Right.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And I really like it just because it fits my point.
Right.
You know?
Slots right into the echo chamber.
Yeah,
confirmation bias. Lovely.
No, but it's nice.
It's
nice to see something different than what you used to see or read or hear. So, read it. It's
that
fascinating.
I mean, already that story is amazing. Mm. The fact that that happens. I mean... That's great, doesn't it?
Does it say where they're from? Because I'm curious. I can't remember.
Peter was the youngest son of Arthur Warner, one of the richest powerful men in Australia, it looks like. Is there footage? I mean, it's a whole long article. The boys, they had been students at a boarding school in Tonga, in the Tongan capital. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Boarding school to me is like England.
Oh my God, that's the connection. Right? Yeah, no, of course. They were at a strict Catholic boarding school in Nkulu Alofa. Sorry if that's pronounced wrong. The oldest was 16, the youngest 13. But they had one thing in common. They were bored witless. So they came up with a plan to escape to Fiji, some 500 miles away.
Yeah, they're crazy. They just build a raft or something like that and decide, let's go. And they didn't even pack enough because they thought they were going to have enough time to go, you know, to the island back.
So right,
they didn't pack food. They didn't do like anything. But I imagine they're like, what, 15? So obviously that's what you think.
Yeah.
You know, fuck this boarding school. Let's go for an adventure.
Yeah.
And I think they
did they get one.
They hit a storm and then they ended up getting beached at this island and 15 months.
Wow.
15 months. And, you know, if you'd believe Lord of the Flies, you'd imagine Piggy is dead.
Yeah.
Whoever Piggy is between them, you know.
Oh, man. It's a good book. I mean, it's you know, it's...
It started off as a book. It wasn't a play to begin with then.
I believe it started life as a novel, yeah.
Right.
It definitely is a bit damning of human nature.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, if you read it as... rather than as a morality tale, as just a novel, you know, with a plot.
Yeah.
Then it's very well constructed and there's heartbreaking moments, there's amazing moments. So it's well written like that.
Well, isn't it interesting then, if you're saying all this, how easily and quickly the society or the audience adapted that as a true representation of human nature as opposed to what it is, a fictional novel.
Mm.
You know, that has truth and it may be in the way people connected and I don't know, I'm imagining because I haven't read it, betrayal or, you know, yeah. that kind of stuff. But then to go that extra step and decide this is how a true representation of what we would be like if we were, you know, in their situation is pretty cynical.
It is cynical.
Don't you think?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's like, you know, we're evolved from chimps, right? We share like 98% or whatever our DNA.
Also bonobos.
But that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
So like, chimps are quite warlike. They go to war with each other. But what do bonobos do? They just fuck. That's instead.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, we're both of those things. Yeah. We're definitely both of those things.
Yeah, he writes about that as well, and how similar we are to the bonobos, or bonobos, or however you say their name, then to the chimps or the gorillas. I think we are also very similar to.
Yeah.
What else does it say about the bonobos?
They're also a matriarchal society as opposed to chimps, which are patriarchal.
Yes. So like they were saying that if. Yeah, or he wrote that if a male bonobo was being too aggressive, they'll bite his dick off. They'll bite, you know, the females will get together and they'll fight. They'll defend themselves and bite your dick off if you're too fucking aggressive. And the most, you know, the guys who get the most sex are the ones that are caring or playful or like engaging, that kind of thing, you know? Yeah, that's also part of it. It's so interesting.
I'll give it a read. Humankind. Yeah. Let me just check the time. There was something I wanted to discuss with you. We're at 5 minutes to an hour. So
cool. That went quick.
Time flies, doesn't it? It's fun. But yeah, so we'll wrap it up in a minute. But I wanted to talk to you what your thoughts are on this. I just read this article the other day. It's called Swabs, Masks, Action. Filmmakers are going to extraordinary lengths to protect cast and crew during COVID-19. So we're about to be on a film shoot ourselves, aren't we? It's quite a small one, but there'll still be, you know,
I assume so,
a fair amount of people.
Yeah.
So it's pretty fascinating what these bigger productions are having to do.
Well, the thing is, I spoke to Jason, who's the writer.
Yeah.
Jason. And yeah, he said that, you know, they've really had to reallocate a pretty big chunk, considering how much they have of their budget.
Right. But
even for such a small scale of production, a pretty big chunk towards having, you know, what are they called? Gel to, you know, wash your hands, or considering all the measures you need to consider when filming. So I can only imagine in a much bigger production, you know, it's going to be crazy.
Listen to some of this. So this is, he's shooting series 2 of War of the Worlds in South Wales. I mean, series 2? Wow. Yeah. That shows how out of the loop. I didn't know there was even a... but they've got a dedicated COVID-19 specialist on payroll at all times, right? There's no more catering, right? Obviously, you get pre-packaged meal and there's two people to a table. You have to be 2 meters apart at all times. But get this, you have to be tested every morning. There are different circles of like bubbles. People who are allowed, of bubbles.
Yeah.
Because obviously the director and the DOP and stuff like that, they have to be able to talk to the actors and be close. But like if you work in props,
you don't have to
be. You don't. Yeah. So you have like a different color armband for how, which bubbles you can interact with.
This. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy, isn't it? But like, but what can you do? I mean, he says at one point, he says, the main philosophy behind how we operate is essentially you've got to protect the cast, Clark explains. Ultimately, the crew are replaceable, including to an extent the director, but the lead cast are not. So you've got to prioritise safeguarding those personnel who, if they went down ill, would cause the whole thing to collapse.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it, for me, when I read it, it's a fascinating story and there's lots about how they do it and all the cleaning and everything. For me, it kind of made me feel a bit uncomfortable because... Right. Okay, I don't know. I'm going to try and unpack it with you now.
Tell me what you feel.
That's why I brought you on. let me bear some water with you for a second and work it out. I think because you must have been on sets where you're like lower down the totem pole.
Yes.
And pre-COVID, there's a definite hierarchy, but there's also like an idea of like, if we're all actors, then we're all actors. Like, obviously, people get their own trailer and stuff like that. But there was a bit of sort of camaraderie. Yeah. And, you know, people don't have masks on. So, you know, you can share a laugh with people and, you know, things happen on set and maybe that's fun.
Yeah.
And this seems like to have taken the bad aspects of like, yeah, but don't interact with the main cast. Or I remember one, this is a heartbreaking little story I'll tell you. I worked on an advert where I was one of the principals and there was, it was quite a big crowd scene. And there was this supporting artist, they call them in the business, for those not in the business, extras, who we'd broken for a meal and some of the actors were sat eating and he like came and sat with us and started to talk with us.
Right.
Being a bit annoying, right, you know, being a bit like, so how do you get this job kind of thing? And you're like, how do you think, buddy? Yeah. Same way everyone ever gets everything.
Yeah.
But like, you know, then this person with a clipboard comes over and is like, you're not allowed to eat with the actors, you know, and just humiliates him in front of.
Yeah, I don't like that.
It made me feel like sick to my stomach.
I bet.
And then this feels just like taking those bad elements and it's been exacerbated even further through no fault of anyone's.
Anyone's, yeah, yeah. I mean, I can see what you mean with it. It's definitely going to be a lot more strict in the way we interact with each other on set. And yeah, I don't think... I'm personally a very chatty person, so I can... I'd love to, like, go and talk to these people or go and talk over there or, you know... I just... If I'm not doing a thing, I'm just going to, you know, fly around or whatever.
Yeah.
But now, I'm sure it's going to be very... You know, you can't leave this area. This is the actor's area. Please stay here. Mm. You know, you're going to have your makeup artist or whatever, wardrobe that are going to be around at the same time. But you can't go anywhere else.
Mm.
And I'm going to be bummed out because I just know this. Okay, well, that just limits the connections we make. Or, like you said, the camaraderie. Mm-hmm. Or, like, just... The fun thing of it is to do it together, to create something together, obviously, and to have a good time. So unless if you don't have a good time, then
what are you doing it for?
Yeah, yeah. What are you doing it for? The audiences want to see a film.
Yeah.
But what is keeping you engaged and enjoying your job, aside from the acting, is to have fun people around, nice people, to talk, to share, whatever.
I guess that's, maybe I'm just being a bit overly anxious about, like, I think people are creatures of habit. And we've been in lockdown ish, but we've been dealing with the pandemic since what, like March in this country?
Yeah.
And it's like, if we don't get a virus within X amount of time, this new normal might start being passed down through generations and we lose previous ways of working.
Yeah.
And we will just now be forced to operate in this much, much less free and creative and inspiring environment.
That would suck.
That would suck.
That would really, really suck. No, you're 100% right, man. If that, because I can see that happening as well. Considering what we've been hearing now with just the COVID and vaccines and all that and how long things will take to get back to normal, hopefully, please, let it not be too long. But if it does, there will be a new norm.
Mm.
And that will suck. It'll fucking suck. I hope not. I mean, we all need to get back to work in some ways.
Yes.
And I understand the kind of... I'm completely against what you've just told, the story of just somebody comes up, you can't be here. It's like, just give me a break.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would definitely suck if that was how productions were to go. And it seems like it will be how productions will be going for a while, at least.
Because what can they do? Yeah, I mean, you know...
They need to make money. The other people need to work. Production, or what's it called? Production companies need to get films out. It's just a cycle, isn't it?
I think there's a potential for good things to come from it. Like, one of the interesting things in this article is it said there's far less, because they're not allowed to, of people just dropping by.
So, what do you mean?
Like, you know, execs, producers.
That kind of thing. Okay,
just... And then they end up, there's like quite a lot of them on set and you're like, who are all these people? And it's like, actually, they don't actually need to be there.
Yeah.
Let's be real. Like, so there's like a lot less of that. And like, there's people who are able to work remotely
because
it's fine to do it, like for whatever their job is. Obviously, you're the director, you can't work remotely.
It's so funny. I filmed a small part for Kingsman.
And the movie.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I can't wait for it to come out. But I remember just sitting down to have lunch at one point and a Russian guy sits down next to me. I don't think there's a problem saying this, but and he ends up being the CEO of Bumble.
Woo.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was just like, to me, I don't give a fuck. I'm sorry. Like,
I mean, yeah, I agree with you also.
No, but I mean, yes, Bumble CEO, like it's one of the biggest companies and all right. that, but it goes over my head, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, but now that we're talking about it, we spoke a bit and I was like, oh, how do you, what are you doing here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What are you, what, you were the CEO of Bumble, you know, you've created all these apps, you've got so much money. What? And he's like in a costume
uh-huh.
and he's a general in one of the scenes. And so he knows Matthew Vaughn from somewhere and he said, come and do you want to be a part? So that's, I'm just connecting that to drop-ins.
Yeah.
Like people who aren't necessarily needed to be doing a part. And I guess it's like something in between. It's for the fun of it. Why not? You know,
right.
You got the director, he can offer you a part in the movie. Why not?
Why not?
But I guess that connection of like just people who say, yeah, fine, I'll be something.
Yeah.
There won't be as many CEOs coming to be Russian generals in a movie.
Not as many tech CEOs.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an interesting story. Yeah. Well, dude, I mean, I look forward to seeing you in Kingsman.
Oh, man, me too.
Who did you film your scene with? If you're able to say, I'll cut out anything if you're not.
I don't think there's going to be a problem, but with Ralph Fiennes.
Oh, cool.
And Reese Ifan.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Dick, no, oh, God, I don't remember his name. Please look it up for a second. Otherwise,
I'm just
going to feel like a badass.
No, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Not the good kind of badass. But,
Kingsman 2?
No, the third one.
Is it 3? I'm out of the loop.
Dick Harrison?
Harris Dickinson.
Oh, right, okay.
See, that would be why.
I got spoonerism.
So yeah, exactly.
Harris Dickinson.
Wow.
And, yeah, that's the three guys that... But, oh, man, I had such a great experience. It was just... This is the first time I've been on such a massive...
I mean, that's...
Massive.
Huge. That's...
Production.
Sets don't get bigger than massive Hollywood studio.
No, not... That's I mean, it. That was my first time, and... My role is pretty, it's pretty small, but it's like connected to the story.
Nice.
So I'm just like, whew, thank God.
Yeah.
They're not going to cut me out. But yeah, it was a great experience. And it was opposite. Like I had just like one scene that I talked to Ralph Fiennes.
Was he great?
Yeah, he was really nice. He was interesting. I mean, you know what my characters are like. They're like not necessarily day roles, but I come in and do a week's worth of work. Right. He knows the rest of the people, so there was a limited interaction with him specifically. But yeah, they were all really nice, really easygoing, and fun to just see them do their thing.
Mm.
Like when Ralph Fiennes had a like standoff with Reese Ifan.
Mm.
I mean, I'm in character, but also I'm just like,
wow,
holy fuck!
Look at these guys go.
Yeah, I'm just
two
like,
giants.
Yeah, and I'm looking at them and trying to figure out, and they're just like just bouncing off of each other, which I'm probably missing so much, you know. And then afterwards, you see Riffan go to the receiver and just like, dude, that was like fantastic. That was amazing. And he says the same to him. He's like, I know, guys. I was there. It was fantastic. Well done.
Right.
It was
then
so
they're like,
fun.
Okay, and we'll go again. And you're like, oh, boy.
Shit.
Yeah, I know. Well, hopefully they find some kind of vaccine soon. And
how do you
get to Kingsman 4?
Sorry, just to go off. Have you ever found yourself in the same situation where you kind of like, opposite an actor you really respect,
mm-hmm.
what was your react? How did you react to that, or how did you deal with that?
So, is the question working with them or socializing?
No, working with them or personally. I mean, like socializing, fine. Each one has their own kind of who they are during filming and stuff like that, and how they interact. But like. Did you find yourself letting the nerves get to you, or did you just manage to separate that and do the scene and like be professional about it, so to speak?
I'm quite good at dealing with nerves. It's never been a big problem
for
me. Like I've never had stage fright or
anxiety
for an audition or anything like that.
That's great.
Quite good at dealing with that.
That's
so
great.
I'm not sure. The thing I think I've learned from watching other people fuck up.
Right.
Like I did this one job. I'm not sure if I'm able to talk about who it was, but one of the smaller parts, the actor was like asking the lead like a bunch of questions the whole time about like some of his other work,
right?
And you could see he was just a bit like I'm at work, I want to work,
yeah.
I'm not giving you an interview,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think for my thing is if I've done the work on the character and I'm able to bring that to the job, then I'm not going to get nervous about it. Right. But if I come in and I'm like, I didn't have time to prepare, or I don't know what's happening, or there's been last minute changes, that's when I might start to get uneasy.
Right, that's
and
true.
Stuff. Yeah. I think.
That's fair enough. I mean, that's definitely... Yeah, I think that's the most... That's the best advice I think you can give any kind of... If you were to, like, speak to a new grad or something like that, you know?
So I'll give you two examples, right? Okay. One's funnier than the other.
Okay.
Which one do you want to hear first?
I want the less funnier first.
Okay, so I worked with Nikki Henson.
Okay.
Who... have you ever seen Fawlty Towers? Nikki Henson, shout out. R.I.P.
I have seen an episode.
Which one?
With the door, or that... was supposed to be there or was not there, and I don't remember the details, but it wouldn't open all the way, or it was supposed to be where it's supposed to
hilarious
be, something like that.
Okay, yeah, that's a classic farce sort of, you know, people coming in and out of doors. So he was in the episode where he's like the sexy guy with the medallion, and he's like he's staying in someone's room but he's not allowed to, so there's a lot of door stuff as well, and like it's such a funny episode, and I've seen it a bunch of times and since being very little. Mm. And now I'm getting to work with him and he's directing me and stuff.
Wow.
And so I just want to talk about that to him straight away. And I'm like, I'm not going to blurt out.
Was your example earlier you that you were saying that?
No. Okay. Ooh, how did you guess? but eventually, in the course of time, there was a moment where he brought it up. You know, we were in the pub having a drink.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, now we can just talk. Here we go.
Yeah.
And like he'll be, because, you know, it's something he's obviously been asked about countless times.
Yeah.
And I think that's just true for any walk of life. If it's something that's gained you notoriety, it's like, I don't want to necessarily talk about it again because I have told 20,000 people this story.
Yeah,
if you want to know the story, it's out there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's almost like caveats some people have before... I've heard like interviewers being like, you know, when they agree to do an interview, they're
what
like
things you're going to talk about.
And one thing it's like, I don't want to discuss that bloody thing.
That makes sense though. That makes sense. Especially if somebody, like you said, who's gotten fame from it, or it was a very popular episode and you know, everyone wants to hear their take on it. There's a certain amount of times a joke or a story can be interesting to yourself, I imagine, until you're like, you know what? Fuck that shit. Fuck off, you know?
Right, when you're even getting bored telling like one of your favorite stories.
Yeah, exactly. If you're getting bored of it, let's not. Can we just
can you imagine?
It?
Yeah. No,
and
I know.
If they brought it up, and that's a pretty good
exactly.
way of going into
and then
it.
They were, you know, telling all the stories about working with John Cleese and where they filmed and just like, you know, some what do they call it, inside baseball, behind the scenes stuff, which was, you know, really it's cool. The stuff I wanted to know about.
Yeah. But you're just eager all this time. You're just like biting your teeth, just waiting for that one moment that it comes up.
Oh, you're in Fawlty Towers. I didn't know.
Playing hard to get.
Tell me everything. And then the other one, I don't think it's the same story, but it's quite a funny one, so we can discuss it. Is this, I was at an audition, I think it was for a commercial. And there was this kid there. You know how some people in auditions are chat. He was so chatty.
Right.
Okay, and I'm when I'm at audition, I don't get that chatty.
Yeah,
I want to kind of focus on the task. If I've got the job, then I'm like gregarious. I'm talking.
Yeah.
But I want to focus beforehand because it's like, well, I'm trying to get a job here. It's an interview.
Mm.
I'm not going to sit around being like, so I was filming this thing
exactly.
This audition. But this kid was like fresh out of drama school,
right?
So he was green as a blade of grass,
right.
and he's talking up a storm, and he was like, you know, this is only my second audition. You know, I only just graduated a few weeks ago. So is this what they're all like? You know, kind of thing. And it was like, I felt so bad for him because it was actually, he was like, it was a commercial audition. And they were like, and you have to, God, this sounds so crazy now in these COVID days. It was a kiss. There was a kiss involved.
In the audition?
In the audition.
Wow.
So we're just, I mean, fucking hell, we're just passing things around.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
But the casting assistant who was like pairing people up and like laughing about it and like being like, you, I think I'm going to have you kiss. You two. You know, getting
like in high school.
Ugh, it was gross. And you can see this kid's eyes just like the more it happened was like, is this what the industry's like?
No.
Is this what my life's going to be?
Poor guy.
Am I just going to be
paired off with random people?
And I was like, maybe if you weren't chatting so much, she wouldn't have, she'd have given you a nicer pairing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
But commercials are just ridiculous. I've actually seen a girl come out crying from a commercial. And my heart broke because they can be really just...
Yeah.
Soulless.
And have you got a good... We'll end on this. Have you got like a good story about a casting, a nightmare casting?
I can give you a nightmare casting.
You can definitely give me a dream one, whatever one. No,
no
pressure.
I don't mind. The reason I was questioning you about it to begin with, because I was curious how you react to kind of like to being in front of a person, because I'm the kid who does not do well with like I let things get to me sometimes. I get, you know, excited easily, and there are some things that, like I said, I don't give a fuck and fine, but certain things I just get really nervous or, you know, excited about.
Sure.
And I just remember for The Kingsman, and that first take of me doing it opposite Ralph Fiennes, and I just, you know, I didn't think much about it to begin with, but the more time I was on set and seeing him just doing thing, it's just like, wow, okay, this is Ralph Fiennes, and you know, he's a big, you know, I've seen films I love that he did.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen like White Crow recently, which he directed and spoke Russian in, and just like,
whoa,
he's a very talented and admirable man. And I was like, okay, this is my scene, I better not fuck it up, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like action and everything happens. He comes into a massive ballroom and I was like, excuse me, I need to talk to him. And I come over, cameras zoom in slowly. He comes near me and my first couple lines, I just forget it. I just black out. I just stare at him. Oh, sorry, guys. And I cut it out of my own. I was like, sorry, guys. I completely forgot it. Nobody moves. Nobody moves, and I'm just like, uh-oh. I look at Ray.
Am I dreaming?
Yeah, I look at Ray Fine, and he just gives me the eye of like, continue. Oh, and I was like, okay, Aaron, get fucking together. And I was like, and it wouldn't come.
It still wouldn't come.
And it was like, cut.
Oh, and then that cut is then the angry cut.
Yes,
because it's like, we could have carried on,
yes,
Aaron.
But I'm nervous, and it's him, and it's like the first time I'm in this kind of like production.
Yeah.
And there's like all these extras on the sides, like a ballroom. Think how many people are there. Oh my god. And I was like, okay, shake it off. It's okay, it's all right. And we had to do it again.
No.
And then it came back and we did the second take and I was there and it was fine. It was, yeah, thank you. But just that's just the human reaction that I had, because
yeah,
it was just like, you know, it's not even that I didn't know what I was doing. It's just like, you know, it gets to you sometimes.
Yeah.
That kind of excitement and getting in the moment and seeing this person you admire for so long. And it's just like, okay, well, I've learned a lesson.
Yeah.
I will be concentrating a lot more.
Right.
For future kind of situations like this.
Vinimanya, right?
Vinimanya, there we go.
Vinimanya.
What a nice way to bring it back to that.
There we go. It's been an absolute joy,
yeah,
having
too,
you here.
It's
I've had
fun.
An absolute blast.
Me too, dude.
So, yeah. Welcome back anytime. Open invitation.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Aaron Vodafone.
Thank you.
Cool. All right.
Sick.
Nice.
We got it, dude. We did an hour 17.
What?
Thank you for listening to the show. This has been The Bliss of the Abyss with your host, me, Robin Umar Jones, Ruskin Denmark, whatever you want to call me. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider supporting it by becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/thebliss of the abyss and give whatever you can. It really, really helps support the show and keeps it growing and becoming better and bigger and brighter. Follow us on all the social medias, follow me on all the social medias, and give us 5 stars, it helps grow the show. Keep coming back every week for more Bliss of the Abyss.
I guess I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good night. to those sites.